This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 741, brought to you by the new Audible original, The Sandman. And iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, and staying socially distant from each other. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 741. I'm Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
I'm Josh Flanagan.
In the morning. We are a fanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. Ironically, this is the one time we're not recording in the morning. Read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the one they like the best. We call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book. We talk about other books in the week, the Patreon pick, listener mail, all the fun stuff, because it's a fun time. We do it for our enjoyment and for yours as well. That's the goal.
Yeah.
Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be spoilers. Be cautious. Josh, you had the pick.
Do you remember last week?
I do, yes.
When
I mean vaguely.
It was a cornucopia of riches. There was
You're
delightful
right.
Comics every way you turned. What could be the pick of the week? Well, it could be all of these things. I believe the week before was a bit like that as well. This was not that week. do you feel this way too?
You know, when you don't have the pick, there's a lot of psychological pressure that's lifted.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I don't know what I would have done if I had the pick. So
I
didn't have to have it, so I didn't have to make the choice.
That's,
but
that's
also
fair.
I didn't have a book where I went, ooh. So
as I'm just going to warn everybody, as we go through this, I'm going to bitch.
Uh-oh.
Well, but for no, anyway. So
constructively bitch.
Obviously. You're not new here. Right. Pick of the Week is Usagi Yojimbo number 10. This is the ongoing original colored series from IDW. They are also concurrently publishing Usagi Yojimbo's like old stuff.
Recolored?
Recolored, and it gets a little iffy because it's not very continuity heavy, to be honest. but I think number 4 of that was last week, and so this is number 10 of the ongoing series. And I really... This was. I'm not giving this like an exception to or anything. This was bar none. This was my favorite book that I read this week. It was the one that
you love a Yojimbo.
You know, I didn't for a while, and I tried to get in a few times, but it is
gone through phases.
Yes, but lately, for whatever reason, I am because for a long time I was really trying to figure out like what it is. What is it about this that has made it stick around for such a long time? And even though it's not like the most popular comic book in the world, it obviously has a fan base that allows it to survive. And I really enjoy, I mean, obviously like Stan Sakai is a great cartoonist. And this is going to change a lot depending on what week it is. But I think to me, one of the things that's happening is that this is a lot of things at once and it appears to be very simple, but is not, which and this is me going off the deep end a little, my reading of Japanese culture in history seems a lot like that. There's a lot of shit going on that you are not aware of as you are not part of the culture. And I feel like he does a really good job of... That's how I'm respectful to a culture, that there's a lot of shit going on.
I'm afraid to even say anything.
No. I feel like this is... So this issue is basically... All right. I'm going to try to... I don't remember where I read the backstory, if this was in this or the other. But basically, the deal is that... Usagi had worked for one of the lords, and then that lord went to war with another lord, and there was a big battle, and Usagi's master was killed, and that's why he's a ronin, or wanderer, right. A masterless samurai.
Yep.
Walking around, you know, on his own. He doesn't really serve anybody. He just tries to do the right thing. And so in this issue, he, years later, goes into the town of the lord who was his enemy, who won. Also, like Usagi's, you know, he was his lord was killed, mm-hmm. and so he's in the town, and he's wearing the title of the issue. The story is called Mon, M-O-N, which is the clan crest. So you'll see it on Usagi's I don't know what that's called, on his shirt, his jacket, his tunic. There's a word I can't think of. And it's
not
just
a gi, is it?
No, that's a karate that's outfit. You know, it's not a kimono, but either way, it's a circle with three dots in it. And as he walks into the town, he just notices that people are staring at him. And like a little kid comes up and he's like, hi. And he's like, hello, because he's a friendly bunny. And the mother grabs him and says, no, we can't. We have to go away. He goes into a tavern. People try to start a fight with him. And Usagi's like, I thought this would be over by now. But at the same time that he's like this really sweet, nice guy, he will take you down.
Yeah.
And I think there's just some really... There's this really captivating thing about it where it looks one way, but it gets really violent. But when it's violent, it's kind of there's the skull deaths.
It's even kind of goofy. I mean, I didn't read this. I didn't like.
You like him better in black and white.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, that one miniseries I read in black and white, mm-hmm. and I thought that the color almost flattened it out. Mm-hmm. It made it less interesting, and it's just not a knock on the colorist. Tom Luth, but I just liked it that way. So but I did really like it. And you're right. The tone is very unique. It's that,
yeah.
It's all these anthropomorphized animals, but then you get really serious violence. But it's also kind of goofy because when people die, they got a skull over their head. But then also you get some really serious, at least when I read it, cultural examination.
Yeah.
So it's a very unique book.
I get over the fact that they're anthropomorphized. Wow, I butchered that word. Anthropomorphized. I when you said it just now, I was like, oh yeah, there are different animals in there, and sometimes I notice it more than others. But really, at a certain point, I'm like, I'm just reading a samurai story,
right? Yeah, for sure.
And I think that part of it gets really fun. It's always fun when your main character is can beat anybody. He's the Sundance Kid. He's Captain America. That's who Usagi Yojimbo is. Like. He doesn't want to fight you, but if you come after him, he's going to win.
Right.
He beat a bunch of, I don't know if it's in this one, but, a bunch of guys, he talks some guys out of it. No, the tavern keeper wants, these four guys want to beat the hell out of Usagi and kill him or whatever. And the tavern guy's like, please don't do that. Here, I'll give you free sake. And Usagi's like, all right, fine, I'll go. And then the guys get Taiwan on and then they go to find him and he beats them. And then you find out that the tavern keeper has betrayed Usagi, even though he was nice to him and sort of told people where to find him. And he's like, listen, I'm going to give away the whole story right now. I don't have any money. And there's a reward for finding you. And I had no choice. And Usagi doesn't kill him. He's like, you're disgusting. That's terrible. There's no honor or whatever. And at that point, the tavern keeper, who really is this pathetic little figure, goes after him with a knife. And Usagi kills him. He just puts him down, and it's really like, this person's wonderful. Stay on the right side of him. He's a really good person, but he will not brook dishonor towards him. And then there's a really, the ending is actually like there's a cliffhanger, and these are often just like one issues. He ends up after the fight. He's sort of he looks like he's haggard, and he gets into a fishing boat, and he kind of passes out in the boat, and then floats down the river. And so we find out what happens next.
I mean, he's very much, you know, Jonah Hex. He's yes. that kind of character. He's the gunslinger, but with the sword, who comes into town, gets into an adventure. And that, at least in this, in the one-off stories, the one I read was a you know, a continuing story. But he's basically what
he's much friendlier than Jonah Hex.
Sure, he's nice. He's a nice version of Jonah Hex.
Yeah,
and Jonah Hex in the same way doesn't necessarily always want to get into trouble either. But if trouble comes to him, he will put you down the same way, you know, Usagi Yojimbo does. So I liked it. I just, for whatever reason, I don't think the colors sort of speak to me. But
well, you know, and then you know, but the, you know, the other side of that is, you know, we're always dealing with the whims of comic book markets and how things are happening. And it's mostly superhero books because that's where, you know, the interest lies. That's where the talent is. And then you've got this corner over here where there's like this nice consistency that's been going on for decades, and you just you can study that thing. You know, the just the sort of gentle contemplation of like, well, what is this thing and what is it trying to say? And it has its own voice. It's nothing else. And this was a week where that really was really good for me. I was like, let's just look at this thing over here. It is timeless. It has nothing to do with any trends or anything that are is happening. And I am becoming more able to appreciate it over time. And I still can't really explain why or what it is. And it's funny because, you know, I'm probably 20 years later than most of the people who've been reading it when they started to appreciate it. But that's how I roll.
It's quality, you know, it's quality storytelling, quality cartooning. He's a legitimate legend in the business.
And it's a different world too. It's a really interesting world that he's in. You know, feudal Japan's pretty damn fascinating.
It is, and also you have to give him credit for doing it for so long and still having the stories to tell.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel, because I'm finding what I think is subtext, or at least you can see something to sort of look for. It means he's not phoning it in. He's still got something to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go.
What else spoke to you this week, Josh?
That's about it. No, there were books that I liked this week, but there was usually something or other about most of them that just didn't sit right with me.
Well, let's get into Empire number 2, which just came out last week.
Yeah. That's fine. Let's get it done with.
It's first important. A programming note is that we can no longer call them the French hippie creatures. As pointed out to us by a listener, either on our website or on Facebook or on Twitter or Discord or wherever, Instagram, the main character, the bad guy, was named Sequoia.
Mm-hmm.
And he's called Koi for short. For some reason, they're spelling it Q-U-O-I.
Which would be French, would be quoi, right. Which would be what?
Quoi. Right, but it's Koi. Okay. So that's the bad guy's name. I mean, this was fine. It was not unenjoyable, but it also wasn't great. It was very much like there was a couple of fun moments. You know, it's hard to tell right now because there's so many side books. I read a couple of them where the actual story is happening, but this seems to be the main through line, and Captain Marvel gets a hammer because everyone gets a hammer now, and
she's an accuser.
She's Captain Marvel the accuser. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it. The art was good.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was. But I think that my thing was that for the first issue or two, it was interesting. I was like, well, maybe this will be an event, but it'll have some sort of thing to it. And as we get through this issue and into I think I read the Avengers. That's not true. I quit the Avengers one halfway through because it was terrible. It turned into a very this is exactly what you think it is and expect it to be. The villain went from being sort of like, they played the villain really arch the whole time. If you look back, you're like, well, of course you saw that coming. But here I've read it a billion times, and I know that we talk a lot about, this feels like old comics and it's fun. And like, you need that, but you can't have just that. And I just was a little, I wanted something surprising. I wanted something unique out of it. And that wasn't really there. It was just a 70s.
Well, I'm willing
era.
To say that we're very early in the story.
Yes.
I don't know how long this is running for. I literally have no idea. Maybe it's 6, maybe it's 8 issues. We're 2 issues in. I'm sure there is a checklist in the back, but I haven't. I'm scrolling as I talk. So it could be that there'll be something that'll happen, you know, somewhere in the end of Act 2 that will switch things up or surprise.
And this could be the swerve of trying to lull you into whatever and, you know, then do the unexpected thing. And you know, God bless them if they do. You know,
so it's six issues.
Yeah. But, you know.
Which is not a lot because we're a third of the way through.
Yeah. And nothing's really happened. I mean, they met up there. Now that I go back, I'm just like, oh, yeah, Tony was acting all weird the whole time. And I was like, why didn't you see this guy happening? Look at the look in his eyes. I said that before. You know, so there's a lot of action, but it seems like it's an excuse to get people to draw other people punching each other, which is what superhero comics are. I can't complain about that, but it doesn't excite me. I wanted it to excite me more than it did. I guess that's my thing.
I didn't dislike it. I didn't love it, but I didn't dislike it.
Yeah.
X-Men Fantastic Four number 4 was a book I struggled with even reading because it's another one of those books where... So this is the issue 4 of a 4-issue miniseries, and you know, the first three parts were probably in 2019, as far as I know. I had a really struggle. It's like, oh, right, so then Franklin's a mutant, and they tried to get him, and there was it took me a while to really get to, you know, where the story was. That said, I thought it was fun. I liked the Dodson art. They're really cranking out art these days, the Dodsons.
Yeah.
Doom is interesting against the mutants. I liked the Doom Valeria scenes.
That was the best part. That was the best, I guess it was one page. Best one page of the issue, I think. It seemed to wrap up really quick.
Yeah.
And that's a complaint I'm going to have a lot about a lot of things this week. It seemed to wrap up really quick. And I remember I had really enjoyed this and liked it. And then it just kind of ended. And then it had this weird coda at the end. Where Magneto and Xavier sort of drop by and like, hey, how's it going? Where's Reed, by the way? And they go down there and they erase his memory and, you know, like, well, you know, back when we were the Illuminati, I might have done this. And it was kind of cute and it was a cool idea, but we've talked about this before. It keeps like, are the X-Men supposed to be villains? Because they feel like villains to me, or at least they feel like they're assholes.
They're assholes for sure. They're more militant about their existence than at least people who weren't previously. Basically, everyone's Magneto at this point.
Yeah, and I get, culturally, zeitgeist, whatever, like, that all makes sense, but it's not, it doesn't make me feel good to read.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting scene. You know, Reed is often, as going back to Civil War, is someone who, ironically for a smart guy, thinks last, you know, builds machine first, thinks about implications later, and
that's a fine
here.
Idea. I'm cool with that.
And so they destroy it, and Dan has memory of how to do it. So that was interesting, and the tension between the FF and X Men was good. I think overall, this, if I read this all at once, this is probably a very successful miniseries. It's just a hard when there's like a 4-month break.
I think that the plot was uneven, though. I think that there was like it climbed and climbed and climbed and climbed, and then just dropped, and it was over.
Yeah, that's a 4-issue. That's the tough part about 4 issues.
It was unsatisfying because there's a lot of good elements. There was also perhaps too many elements for a 4-issue miniseries. It's
a lot of characters.
Yeah, and a lot of characters who had stakes and things going on.
I don't think I understand, and I've been reading almost all the books, I don't think I understand Franklin's powers or what's happening to them.
I know that every time he uses them, he drains them, and so therefore
right,
they won't.
He's like Spawn now.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I feel like that's been covered in several issues.
I know that's what's happening. I don't
fully know what his power is.
And also, I know he's like the most powerful mutant, and he like can reshape reality. And you know, we've seen other books where he's in the future with King Thor, and they're the only two people left, and him and Galactus. And but then, like at one point, he like unleashes like a wave of energy from his hands. I was like, wait, does he do that?
Well, it's one of those things when you make somebody so powerful. Like, because that's the threat. He's a nuclear bomb. It's hard to define what the power is. It's the same thing with the Infinity Gauntlet or with Black Bolt or whatever. Like, it's
and
just,
I'm not knocking the book for it. I'm just saying personally.
I don't know. No, I think you're right.
What's going on? Because I know people might think, oh, well, you're criticizing. You don't understand. I don't understand. So that keeps me from loving.
I don't think it's consistent. I don't think he has God powers. I mean, that's
right.
That's the thing.
Batman 95. Part one of the Joker War. Did you read this?
No.
We had a couple of tie-ins, correct. We had Detective Comics and Batgirl, which both tied into the Joker War. And this is officially part one. James Tynion IV, great art by Jorge Jimenez. He's always terrific. But
a lot of Jorge's in comics lately.
Yeah. So the Joker has initiated a hostile takeover of Wayne Corp, and he has the controlling interest of the stock. He has all the money. A newscaster calls it Stately Wayne Manor as it's being repossessed by the board. I don't think that's how that actually works. I feel like that house has been paid off years and years and years ago. But whatever.
He's mortgaged it a bunch of times to pay for bad plans.
Yeah, he's 10 times mortgaged it to pay for the Batcave. You know, it just, the logistics of it is kind of stupid. Like, the idea of Joker taking over Wayne Enterprises is stupid. I hate the idea that all these people now know who Batman is. Mm-hmm. And it's not just...
So that's the pitch. Joker takes over Wayne Enterprises, thereby...
Joker...
declawing Bruce Wayne.
He knows all the secrets, so he somehow initiates a hostile takeover of Wayne Enterprises. He now owns Wayne Enterprises. He's cut Batman off of his money. He's cut him off from his resources. He knows his secrets, so he's able to attack him in a different way. It's the problem is, like, it feels very, very, very similar in a way to the big Joker story Snyder did, where Joker attacked the family, and the implication was he knew who they were, and it feels very similar to that.
It feels like such a weird choice to decide to do, like, a big Joker story on the heels of, like, 50 big Joker stories. And I know that, like, everybody's like, I want to tell my Joker story. Well, we have a lot of those. What if you tell the great Poison Ivy story, or the, you know, just any...
Yeah, especially since the film that's coming out, it's Riddler, Penguin, and Catwoman. So you think they'd focus more on those guys, but...
Because no one's done a great Penguin story in a while.
Yeah, I don't begrudge anyone wanting to tell the story. It just feels very similar, while also feeling kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, like, Batman's new suit's revealed, and it's, like, all shiny and light, like aquamarine and brown. I was like, what the fuck is that?
I don't think they're writing this for you anymore, man. And the question then...
They were only a few months ago.
Yeah, well... And they didn't let him finish it in the book. And you weren't fully sold on that either.
Has anyone heard about that book at all?
Shit, I don't know. I'll ask him.
Batman, Catwoman? Not that I was super excited for it, but geez. You know, it just doesn't feel exciting. It feels like a retread. That's something that just felt, you know, relatively recently just happened. I don't feel like they've done the legwork to make it make sense. It's just all of a sudden the Joker... It has control of the company, and all of his crooked people are in charge.
Well, there's no other books that's happening other than Daredevil and Spider-Man.
It just feels strange. Batman doesn't feel important to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is what it is.
I think there's... It's important to some, like, Batman's having a moment in terms of published comics that seem to be popular, but you've got all the metal stuff going on, and you're not into that. Mm-hmm. And I think Tom King's Batman run was hit or miss for you, but, you know, good.
It was uneven, but the stuff I liked, I really liked.
Yeah, you know, and Detective's been...
It's fine. I enjoyed it. I enjoy reading it. Like, this week's issue was... The ending of the Two-Face story, it only tangentially tied into Joker War, but it's solid. It's not great. It had good issues. It's mostly just fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mostly just a fine book.
Yeah, but that's not, I don't know. It's not what you want with Batman. I don't know. But it can't always be, like, up top. You know, just, it's not possible. So we'll put it this way. This will clear the way for a great Batman run.
Maybe. Who knows? I think it was supposed to clear the way for whatever they were going to do.
They'll only be available on AT&T phones, but it's going to be a great Batman run.
Middle West 18, Scotty Young and Jorge Corona with Jean-Francois Bellieu. How did you feel about this ending?
Similar.
To Batman?
No, similar to X-Men Fantastic Four. I felt like... I was like, maybe this isn't the last issue. And then I was like, that's the end of that. I liked there was the big fight with the kid and his dad, and he almost lost control.
Jorge Corona has been a revelation. And
yes.
He draws incredibly compelling tornado people.
Yes.
I mean, just these wonderful two-page spread vistas of tornado demon people fighting other tornado demon people, and it looks great.
And
this has been a great-looking book.
I also noted when that was happening, like, I could still tell what was going on in the storytelling. It wasn't just, you know, like, it was like a real thing. So I thought that was good. Mm-hmm. And I think that the sort of personal, the bits at the end where, I can't remember the boy's name, you know, where his dad says, I'm sorry, and he comes to accept it, and he's like, it's not okay, though, and I have a family. That emotional payoff of the whole thing was really good, but it felt like it was crammed in right at the very end, which is probably, you know, somewhat of a factor of publishing and how it is. I just think I would have liked to live with it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a longer issue, maybe one more issue, something. It just felt like it was over really quick, and then the credits rolled.
Well, I mean, I just count it as a 14-page mm-hmm. conversation between them. It's pretty long.
All right. You know, but like, that's the feeling I had, which is not based on a lot. I thought that the writing, the emotions conveyed, and obviously the art, I thought it was all great. I just think it needs something else, but maybe I'd built it up because I'd really liked it so much.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't super into it. I think if you have, I don't want to generalize, but I think if you have issues that are relative to the story, then you might feel more of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was an interminable 14 pages because I was like, oh, we're going to do this for.
I really wanted to see how they were going to handle it, and I liked how they did. I will give you that.
But I agree that the first half of this book was really terrific, and then when he went to the camp. The labor camp, it sort of fell off.
See, I think the middle part kind of lost me a little, but the camp I liked because you see, I wish I could remember names, you see him sort of come into himself and he gets confidence and you see how he's different than his dad, or, you know, that he has skill and other people are recognizing it. And so mm-hmm. he's got a reason to feel good about himself. I have no idea what the fox was about the whole time, but I liked the big robot. And I also didn't know who most of the, a cast like the kids were. I sort of lost track of them. But overall, I really, really enjoyed the series. It's beautifully produced. I thought it was written from the heart. I think it showed growth as a writer, you know, for Scotty Young. And I'd recommend it for sure.
Okay.
That's the deal. Another thing that I would recommend. See that segue? Except I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
Audible, the Audible original, The Sandman. Let's take a listen.
The year was 1916. Roderick Burgess conceived a plan. He would capture death.
You are death.
It's him. He's back.
The Sandman's a fairy story.
He's back, John.
Dream of the endless.
Greetings to you, Lucifer Morningstar.
Hello, Dream.
I have shown him fear in a handful of dust.
The Sandman, only from Audible, in association with DC. Just close your eyes and listen.
At one point, he just said, hello, Dream, and I think it was James McAvoy, so I heard hello, Gene, said by Professor Xavier. You can listen to the new Audible original, The Sandman. I'm guessing if you are listening to this show, then you are familiar with what The Sandman is. You might have even recognized Neil Gaiman's voice at the beginning of that. They are the best-selling DC graphic novels, comic books written by Neil Gaiman. It has been adapted and directed by Dirk Maggs, which is a fantastic name.
Great.
Hailed by the Los Angeles Times Magazine as, quote, the greatest epic in the history of comics, which I believe that there's a ring of truth to that. I could argue it, but I could accept it also. The audio adaptation has been decades in the making. You've got James McAvoy in the title role. That would be Dream, Lord Morpheus, the Sandman, which is intriguing. You follow the Morpheus the Dream Lord as he is pulled in from the Dream Realm and imprisoned on Earth. That happens in the first book. When he finally escapes, he must restore his power to build his dominion. That's the rest of the story. And that's just the start. This cast is fantastic. You've got Riz Ahmed, who I know from The Night Of and many other things. He was fantastic. You've got Kat Dennings. You've got Michael Sheen. Just saying Michael Sheen makes me smile.
Let me tell you, that's underselling it, because I'm looking at the cast page. You got Taron Egerton. You've got Samantha Morton. You've got B.B. Newworth. You've got Andy Serkis. It's like, it's a powerhouse
wow.
voice cast. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I heard names. I heard a lot of voices in that I kind of recognized, and so that's great. It's funny that I recognize Neil Gaiman's voice as much as I do anybody else's, which
strange. I mean, he has one of the best voices in the world.
He does have a good voice. In your wildest dreams, you've never heard anything like this. Listen now only on Audible. Go to audible.com/thesandman, and, you know, also, there's a lot of great audiobooks on there, and they can enrich your world as they have mine. That's just my experience.
Billionaire Island number 3, Mark Russell, Steve Pugh. This is Ahoy Comics. I don't know how successful these Ahoy books have been for Mark Russell. And I think it's down to the length. So he had Second Coming, which was originally the DC book that got canceled, and Ahoy picked it up. And I think it only ran 4 issues, or maybe 6. But Flintstones ran 12, and the other book, whose name I never remember, ran 12. The cat book.
Snagglepuss.
He's able to tell a really rich story within 12 issues. Here, this is issue 3 of 4, and I don't know what the point of this book is.
Well,
other than to sort of the standard.
Really, it's 4.
You know, rich people are terrible. You know, rich billionaires are terrible and selfish. Like, that's his message, but I think there needs to be something more than that.
I don't think you get long enough for him to sort of hit you with the characters.
That's really the big problem here.
Yeah, if you were to use the example of, you know, Red Sonja, you get to know her, you get to know, you know, the other emperor, you get to know the kids, some of the people. Here, this all moves very fast. I still don't, I guess he's the protagonist.
But not even really. I mean,
the guy who killed the original billionaire, I thought he was going to be the protagonist, but I don't really... Like, they're interrogating him. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Why are you doing any of this? Then there's the woman who escapes from prison.
The reporter, yeah.
So what I think that the deal is here is that I think it is entertaining, especially if you're familiar with this, but I'm not going to buy this for somebody. That was what I came up with. I'm not going to go, you've got to read this.
I bought the Flintstones for several people and enthusiastically you know, rang that bell. And I know they're doing a sequel to Second Coming. And maybe they'll do a sequel to this one, but it seems just like there's not enough really to hook you. There's not enough meat on the bone here.
Yeah,
I'm saying that in a story about a dog.
Wonder Twins, I thought, had that. Like he.
Yeah, Wonder Twins was longer too, though. It was like 10 issues.
Yeah, exactly.
So you really got to, you know, he has a lot of interesting and compelling and funny ideas, but you have to also wrap it up in a character piece that is compelling. And I don't know that this is that. And I don't know that Second Coming was that. It's a little closer because there's fewer characters. But here you've got like the reporter, and then you got the hipster, and you have the Punisher guy, and you have the couple billionaires. And then now we've got the new character here who is kind of crazy living on his own on the island. And there's a lot of people to focus on, and none of whom really give you anything.
Yeah.
You know? Because there's not enough time spent with them. So... I finished reading this. And I was like, that was fun, but like, what's the point?
Yeah, I think it was the thing where I basically got to the end. I thought that was fun. I'm never going to recommend this to anybody. I'm not going to think about it again. I can enjoy it when I'm reading it and it has bits and things like that, but it's not like those other books. And maybe it is linked. Maybe that's a thing. But I think it's simply a matter of having a character who you invest in, you know.
Right, and I think that the why Second Coming is slightly more successful is the main superhero character was interesting. Even though he was basically Superman, he was interesting, and Jesus was interesting. Here, it's just there's a lot of people. I don't know any of them. Daredevil 21, Chip Zdarsky again, and Marco Cecchetto.
Good-looking book.
This is the aftermath of the War in Hell's Kitchen story, and at the end of the last issue, Matt, as Daredevil wearing civilian clothes with Daredevil mask, is turning himself into the cops, and now we get into the legal, ethical quagmire that is Daredevil attempting to get himself arrested for the murder from the first issue of this book, or the accidental killing in the first issue of this book. Murder is too harsh of a term.
Here is my question. Yeah. How long is the mayoral term in New York City?
Is it 6? No, that's Congress. It must be 4 years.
It's either 2 or 4.
It's not two.
It's not two. So then that would be, it's 4.
Yeah.
This was Charles Soule's story to put him in the seat. Like, I think it's been at least 4 years.
Well, what's comics time?
No, I know that, but basically just like, okay, the Kingpin is mayor thing. Like, we've hit it from a lot of different angles. And I like this story, and I like the way that he's writing them, and I don't want this story anymore.
Yeah.
So basically the bit at the end is he's always trying to, you know, deal with like what he's responsible for, and I get it, and it's fine, and there's interesting and compelling scenes in here. But the thing is now that he's gonna turn himself in, but he's gonna be tried as Daredevil, and therefore he won't reveal his secret identity. And all of the stuff around that, him meeting with the DA, that conversation is all really cool. And I just thought, I don't want to read the next part.
Yeah.
I don't want to read the court saga and the jail. And I've read it. I can think of three stories I've read that in different flavors.
Oh, I want to say that the Spider-Man scene was terrific. But,
it was.
There's a trend that we aren't into, and we've been not into it for years, is, man, this is a downer episode. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I told you. I warned you.
Going into it, I didn't think so. And it's not a new thing, but it's basically, let's make these heroic characters as least heroic as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take them down a peg. Let's take away their powers. Let's, in the case of Daredevil, let's have him accidentally kill a guy and live with that grief for 21 issues. There's a lot of like, let's give Doctor Strange a consequence to using magic. Let's do all these things. I think it's more prevalent at Marvel. Let's do all these things to make the hero less compelling.
Let's make Superman awesome for a while and then reveal himself to the public.
Yeah, and then kill that whole book. I agree with you. I just would like Daredevil to be Daredevil and not, you know, now he's going to go to jail as Daredevil, maybe. Or at least he's going to go to trial for murder as Daredevil.
And then Punisher will show up there.
I mean, the thing is, like, I don't think he'll actually go to jail because that would really be repeating themselves.
Yeah.
He'll probably get found innocent, but you know, the idea that there was a story in Charles Soule's run that superheroes could testify in criminal trials, and now it's like, well, if the Supreme Court says that, then it extends that they could be charged and arrested and charged as them, as their superhero identity, not their real identity. It's just a level of real world bureaucracy I don't know that I want in my superhero.
And that's a
books.
Really good. It's introducing bureaucracy into their lives, which can be done in a fun way. But Daredevil's not a. It's a serious book, so everything seems to be just like ugh.
I think there were good scenes, man, this book looks great.
I think they're Marvel all
Shadow is the best.
Yes, I think they're all good ideas. Like, they're great ideas on paper. I'm like, these are great. It's smart. That's intelligent. I don't want to read it. I mean, I will. I think, you know, Chip Zdarsky's, you know, he's got a lot of talent. He's got a lot of sway. But I'm not really looking forward to it. And also, I just feel like we've been in this story for 21 issues now. Like, come on.
And the next issue shows Iron Man's helmet with the horns on it.
Oh, good. Iron Man. Means. I don't get enough Tony Stark in my life.
Action Comics 1023. And part two of The House of Kent, which is the story in which Connor Kent has shown up, Jonathan Kent has come back from the future, and they're all dealing with the Red Cloud, who has been dogging Superman this whole run by Bendis. This is Bendis and Romita. And I have been defending Romita's art all the time against all comers. I can't do it here. I can't.
It's bad. This was not a good issue.
No, it wasn't. There was one or two moments I liked, the tractor moment being the best one.
Yeah, I you've just got Connor there now. Who's this? It's hard to explain. Like, that's a good gag, but he's just there. And when you've already got John, it felt like there was no need for that to be
well,
there.
Well, that's DC in a nutshell, is that they wanted to move on, so they created all these new characters, and then for whatever reason they are just starting to bring back the old ones, and so now you've got two Superboys.
Yep.
You got two Flash Kid Flashes. You know, you've got two, you got your kicking into, you got three Robins. Like, it's like,
yeah.
It's comics in a nutshell. Yeah. And I really hated the scene at the end when he shows up as Clark Kent.
Yeah. Oh,
and so he's like wearing his clothes with the shirt open with the costume underneath it and his glasses on, and it's like, oh my God, it's Clark Kent, run. And it's just like, oh.
No, but then my other thing is, like, this Red Cloud thing and the other lady, it's been going on forever. I can beat him. I know you can beat him, but I can't beat him. What if you could beat him? And then she's like she's a threat, but only because they're saying she is. And right. I don't get the character. I've spent 1,000 hours with the character of the Red Cloud, and I don't understand, and I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
I just want not, and I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that, like, I really liked it so much for so long that, like, these just feel like slogs, and I look forward to it. When I see a Superman or an Action Comics, you know, cover, I'm like, oh, good, there's a new one. And I'm just halfway through this, like, oh, Jesus, didn't I read this? It just, eh.
It, yeah, it's, we were, you know, huge Bendis fans, huge fans of the early part of the run. It just, it took a turn on the reveal, and it's not coming back.
I don't think that. I don't know why we went that way. Superman as a father, as a person trying to do a thing, and you, I just added this. I mean, I get it. I get all of it in terms of, like, pitching a story and trying to think of a new thing to do. But just, I don't know. It was good before you added all that stuff.
I didn't do it.
Not you. I'm talking to you, DC.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about.
Those are the books that we did talk about.
Over at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can add a book to the rundown by voting. Every patron can vote. And this week, it was a blowout win for Chew, number one, from Image Comics and John Layman. What?
Huh?
Dan Boltwood on art instead of Rob Guillory for CHU, number one. And I have lots of complex feelings about this.
Really?
No. Complex might be too overstating. So for years, Chew, C-H-E-W, was one of my favorite books. If you go back and watch the old barbecue shows, in which we always ended with the question, what's your top five books right now? Chew was almost always on my list. Yep. I loved Chew. I don't remember how long ago it ended, but it ended a long time ago, and I don't necessarily remember how it ended, just because that's the nature of the many, many, many miles in my brain right now. I don't know why we're back.
I do.
I don't want to, you know?
No, well, I mean, I know, and that, like,
I don't want to, I hate, you know, trying to prescribe motivations when, yes, I don't know the motivations. I don't know the history. I don't know why. Maybe John Layman woke up one day and he's like, oh my God, I've got a great issue.
Listen.
Great idea for going back to Chew. Or maybe it's because he hasn't had anything else really work. I don't know. But it feels like, I felt a little sad seeing this book was out. And it'd be like if the next Brian K. Vaughan book was another lost man, another last man. Like, I'd be like, oh.
So, that answer was flippant. I think actually disrespectful. I like Layman. I think Layman has a great imagination. He has a great energy for comics.
Yeah.
I think that Chew was an unlikely hit. I don't think anyone could have seen that coming, that it being what it was. And I can see really liking those characters and wanting to spend more time with them. And you know, no one is accusing.
Yeah, I don't know why. It could have been for any number of
reasons. Yeah, I was going to say, no one's accusing Terry Moore of going back to a well. But that's because Strange in Paradise wasn't as, you know, like, overall successful as this. But, like, I need to give this guy the same credit, same benefit of the doubt. However, Chew is a result of the combination of writer and artist. And without that combination here, it feels less than. I'm not even going to say it's less than.
It didn't work for me. It didn't work at all for me.
I just couldn't place it. I like that it was a different type of book from the beginning. Like, there was a crime story, and it wasn't just a continuation of the other story, you know, with the guy.
Although kind of.
Yeah, but, you know, things have changed. I don't know. I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt.
Here's my overall thing. If this book isn't called Chew, I might have liked it a lot more. I thought it was fun. The story was, you know, if you take the name off and it's about this other woman who has some, you know, similar powers, and these sort of bumbling gang of thieves who try to knock off this, you know, mob place, and it all goes sideways on them. It was fun, and the art from Dan Boltwood was good.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it's in the Chew world, it's called Chew, and it's just not Chew, because there's clearly a magic that also comes from Rob Guillory's work. You know, maybe all those background jokes were him the whole time. I don't know, but they weren't here.
They were him.
And that was a big part of the sort of wackiness of that book. And it felt almost like this was like a more serious take on Chew.
Well, Chew wasn't supposed to be funny. Chew was supposed to be a straight up thing. And then, you know, when Rob did it, and as they kept going, it turned into more of a thing. And he realized, like, oh, I can make these jokes. I can put him in here and it works. But I think that this artist, Dan Boltwood, he's not, you know, I wouldn't get him confused with Rob Guillory. He's not aping Rob Guillory, but he is in the realm of Rob Guillory. And because of that, I don't know, like, I think it needed to be more different than it is. Visually, tone-wise, you know, I can't really say that one thing or another, but it basically, with a book that I loved that much, that you loved so much, it's going to be really hard to come along and do that when sort of half the team is there. It's a solo album. It's when your favorite band and then one of the guys does a solo album and it doesn't have that thing that the other one did. There's good stuff in there. You know, it's not even coming from a bad place necessarily.
No, again, Dan Boltwood's really
good
cartoonist. There's even a great pinup in the back that's in a slightly more cartoony style. And I kind of wish he'd drawn that way. But,
and you want, you know what? I hadn't even put together that it's the same word phonetically. I said, oh, it's Chew. That's the name. And then I realized, oh, it's the, when you said that, I was like, oh, it's actually literally the same if you say it out loud. Yeah. I mean, like, it's my expectations are too weighted.
In the back essay, which is shorter than the other image essays, he compares it to Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. And things like, I wasn't interested in Better Call Saul either.
I thought Better Call Saul was better than Breaking Bad. No, yeah, not
I,
better.
I have zero interest in it. So
that's
like,
a you thing, though.
No, but like my point is, I like the thing. It ended. It was a complete.
No,
I
get that.
I don't want to go back to the world.
I do think that that was the case here. It's like Chew ended, and I was like, cool. Better Call Saul, I just liked that show better than Breaking Bad. But I understand that as a thing where you want to get out of the thing. Yeah, is, but that is also an example of you know your opinion on it notwithstanding, like it's a successful show that they went on to do, and I'm giving it away, like I'm gonna read the next one. I want it to be good. It's just it's gonna take a little while for me to either figure out if I can find the if I can appreciate it with
and
it
also
not being
if,
what it,
if
was.
It had just been the sister and like at the end all the characters from first Chew hadn't shown up.
I agree with that.
That would have been a different story. And I'm looking at the cover for the next issue, and it's Tony Chew and the guy and the blonde guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bummer. But again, I don't think it was badly done. I think the art was great, and I think the story was fun. It just left me feeling weird.
It's funny, because as I'm talking about it right now, I don't think we've talked about the story at all. And if you'd ask me right now, I don't know if I could tell you what it was. Because the whole time I was just thinking, is this what I want? Is this a
right,
thing?
Yeah.
And at the end, you know, I want to like it, but I haven't been made to like it yet, and it's got a lot going against it in that way. It's got a lot of weight, baggage.
Yeah. I'm going to give it one more issue.
Okay.
But it kind of bummed me out. And again, I'm not saying he shouldn't be able to go back and do other stories within the world. It's his world. He can do whatever he wants. I just don't necessarily want to go back to that. Sometimes it's just best to move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
That's fair.
And I don't mean that it's a hard and fast rule, because sometimes I will go back. But just for Chew, I just loved it so much as a thing that existed. And
well, it wasn't like they had other guys come in and draw issues of it.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
You know, it always
looked like one way.
Layman and Guillory, and they made a thing, and you knew. It's interesting, too, because Farmhand, I've gotten very used to that, you know, but it looks like Chew, but it isn't Chew, but it gives me that same sort of similar feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different thing. Like this is called Chew, but it doesn't look as much like Chew. That book has nothing to do with it, and I'm like, oh, it gives me the Chew feelings.
So how would you rate this book?
It's a tough question.
Out of five.
3.25.
I was thinking 3. Because again, I thought that, you know, there's nothing wrong with it.
I am unable to judge it objectively in a way. I will say that.
That's fair.
Like if I had just read this on its own and I didn't know anything about it, I might feel differently.
Mm-hmm.
I got history. And we're both going to try more.
I'm going to try the second issue.
All right, fair.
And see how I feel. So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's the patron pick. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, any patron who does so gets a superpower live on the show. Like Nathaniel Booth. It's very classic.
It's very Revolutionary War, like Silversmith.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I didn't
step on your Nathaniel
Booth
thing. He's got the best silver in the land.
Did you just pivot?
No, I'm just saying that's what people
say. Oh, I see.
His power is that he has toaster hands.
Any kind of bread or bagel, or is it
if you put it in, on his hand, and he could toast one side, or he could put his hands on both sides of bread and toast the bread.
I don't think people understand how far toasters have come in my lifetime.
Oh, for sure. I've got a great new one. It's probably my first modern toaster, and I'm constantly amazed by the things.
Not a toaster oven, though?
No, it's a toaster. Oh,
I have a toaster oven.
I've never had a toaster oven in my life.
It's pretty good. It has bagel settings. It has a, if the thing is frozen, setting. You do a
lot.
The
only toaster oven I had experience with was the one in the dining hall in college, where you put your bagel on the little conveyor belt and then it went down the thing.
That was just an industrial toaster.
I liked it.
I do miss slots.
I have slots. I have a button you push and the slots go down automatically, and then they rise when they're done.
Oh.
There's nothing to push down.
There's not a pop-up either, I assume.
I think there's a button where you can be like, I'm done now.
Right.
Like an ejector seat button.
Right. But the toast doesn't gain velocity.
No, it doesn't shoot out and hit the ceiling. Right. Although that would be awesome, and I would use it all the time.
Yeah,
did.
Obviously. And you'd stand there with your plate like, I'm going to catch it perfectly this time.
Right in the butter. Anyway, Nathaniel Booth will perfectly toast anything you put in his hands.
That's great. I like that.
Yeah. Also, great silver.
I mean, amazing.
So that's just him and his world, not this power.
And the thing is, it's not overly detailed. It's just the right amount of sort of decoration. Justin Cresswell can adjust any seating to be either very comfortable or very uncomfortable. And it's
like from afar?
Yeah, like he can do it to your seat that you're in right now. So he would see that somebody is uncomfortable, and he could adjust it, and all of a sudden it would just be perfect for the seater. And then conversely, if he's in a tough negotiation or something, he can make the seat that the person across from him uncomfortable. If he's in a restaurant and he hears somebody being rude to a waiter, he will make their seat very uncomfortable.
So he would look at me and say, "Hey, why are you sitting 8 hours a day in a wooden chair?"
Yeah.
And he would make it more comfortable for me.
Yeah, he could make that much more comfortable. The chair doesn't.
Man, I got nothing. I'm just trying to barely hang on here.
Yeah,
that's all I got.
He could use it either way, though. He controls the comfort of seating.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go get your own superpower. You can vote for the patron pick, and that's where we have our stretch goals. And that's where the people who want to help keep the show going go to donate. And we thank you. You've unlocked many fun things. Our hangouts. And
earlier tonight, my wife was like, "Do you do a show extra every week?" And I was like, "Yeah, we're up to like 3 or 4 a month now."
And who knows? It could be adding a G.I. Joe show. That's our next stretch goal, to analyze each episode of the G.I. Joe Real American Hero. So if you want to hear that show and not on the regular show, as many people did not, you can go to patreon.com/iFanboy and you can donate and help us get to that next stretch goal. And thanks to all who do. T-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com. That's where you can find our 8 designs. And also on other things, but in T-shirts. But they're fun on T-shirts. They're a lot of fun on T-shirts. Fanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out directly via PayPal. Again, billionaires welcome. 100 millionaires welcome. Just single. We'll take single millionaires. We're not going to discriminate.
The $1 million doesn't buy what it used to, but it can buy me.
Do you really want another piece of art on the wall that you never look at?
Mm-hmm.
Or even worse, put in one of those art like bunkers where they buy expensive Picassos and never look at them? Is that a great use of your money? Or do you want to finance Josh's Porsche addiction? That's what you should really ask yourself when you look at the mirror in the morning.
I'm just a man with a desire, with a dream. And frankly, you're not helping.
Cezanne, or make this random dude happy. Just think about it on the next time you're trying to figure out what to do with your extra money. iFanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can go find our Booksplod books and a general link. We thank everyone who donates or helps support the show. Keeps us going, keeps us in new equipment, keeps us in new functions and features. We have a new way of recording. It's more expensive than the old way, but it's better. So we did that. And that's all we can do that. Thanks to everyone else who helps support the show. So thank you for doing so. And we have time for one. I know the clock says we're long, but we started a little late.
Yeah, let's we can do one. Let's talk to Rashad B., who had asked us, mm-hmm. Would you be interested in a serialized drama similar to Mad Men about the creation of Marvel? Each season could focus on the big years, the Kirby and Stan season, Claremont takes over the X-Men season, the Image guys leaving season, etc., etc. Not a documentary, but a straight-up drama. Who do you think would play Stan and Jack?
So you know how Sean Connery once had the cure for cancer and he lost it.
I do.
Rashad had me and then he lost me.
Go on.
So, like, sure. Would I want to see a show similar to Mad Men about the creation of Marvel in the 60s? Yes. And then he lost me after that because you can't go each season and jump to the 80s and then the 90s, 2000s because people have no context. You and I, Rashad, have the context. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's interesting. Claremont's interesting. The Image guys are interesting. But if Random Joe on the streets watching season 3 opens up with Todd McFarlane saying, I can't stand here working here anymore, he's going to say, I don't, what? I don't care.
All right, so let's cut that last sentence out.
You need context.
So we're going to say, let's say the show goes from 1961 to 1969.
Sure.
What year did Kirby leave for DC?
It should end with Kirby leaving.
Yeah, okay. So I would watch that. I think sure. There would be a way to do it. That would be great. When Roy Thomas comes, he would be played by Nate Cordry, and it would be fantastic. And then, oh man, it would be a great Neil Adams would show up. So I have prepared my casting choices.
Wow, and you hate casting.
I did. I know.
That's incredible because I didn't cast this at all. My thought was, you know, relative unknowns like Mad Men. They were all working character actors, but none of them were big stars. You know, so that's what I would have gone with, but continue.
Ready?
Yep.
In the part of Stan Lee.
Uh-oh.
Michael Stuhlbarg. And in the part
that's
of...
That's kind of amazing.
In the part of Jack Kirby.
Uh-huh.
Matthew Reese.
Interesting. That's real interesting. I said that's a real left field choice. I don't hate it.
I right away. I actually had them flipped at first, and then I was like, no, not that way. The other way.
That's really interesting.
I thought it would be a great show.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I think there's a way you could do the show that makes it interesting to the people because you know everyone knows the movies now, and so you don't want to totally ape Mad Men, even though that's the time frame it was in. But you know. It's an interesting tale, and I think...
Well, you've got no, a time...
Marvel would never allow it to be told, but it would be an interesting tale.
Well, we've read it in comic book forms a lot of times. We've read, what was the Howard Chaykin series from a year or so ago?
Yeah, but it only works to the modern audience, or the wide audience, if it's about Marvel Comics.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way Marvel Comics would ever sign off on the use of its names and characters and things based on the
sure.
story of...
Sure, let's put that aside, though.
Yep.
I've read books about this for years. I have heard stories about it from people who were there.
Sure.
It is endlessly fascinating.
Oh, it's a great story. The 60s of Marvel is a great story.
Yeah, and I don't think it's only fascinating to you and me because we have context. I think it's a great
story. No,
well,
I'm saying
story.
You can't jump.
Yeah.
You can't jump in eras without context. You can do the first story 100%. I think I do believe you could do it as a great story about the creation of these fantastical characters in the 60s and all the tension between Stan and Jack and Crazy Ditko and everyone,
The fact that all of these guys are working in an industry that nobody respects, including
themselves.
And they're
middle-aged guys. They're not like young 20-somethings. They're like, you know, in their 40s and working and, you know, they also, some of them have PTSD from the war. There's a lot of interesting things to really explore there. It's a great idea. I just think you'd run into like
no, it wouldn't ever get made. But if that was not the case, it would be great.
I'd be really surprised if there wasn't somewhere a pilot script for this that someone has written. Whether or not it'll ever get made, I'd be really surprised because it's
even
a great story.
Even as a spec,
yeah,
for sure.
Good email, Rashad.
It was. That was fun, huh? I had casting right.
I'm literally floored.
Yeah, I did.
I needed to go lay down. It's a good thing the show's over.
It's a good thing that nobody can, that Justin Cresswell isn't around.
Contact at ifanboy.com. It's good casting, too. It's not only that you did it, but it was really good.
I appreciate that very much. I was really excited to say it to you. And I was like, don't write this script. You gotta
Wait,
surprise him.
Who's the guy we love that's also in Perry Mason?
I need you to be more
specific.
The
guy who plays the sidekick.
Oh, I can't think of his name. The Boardwalk Empire brother.
Yeah.
Oh, he's great.
Can he play Joe Simon or Steve Ditko? I just wanted to be in the show.
He's not Joe Simon.
He could be Joe Simon.
No, I'm not seeing that. I have to think about that. Let's come back next week and talk about it. Oh my God, that's gonna be a whole thing.
So we got shows. Media Splode number 5 came out right behind the feed on this show. Came out this earlier this week. We talked about Greyhound. We talked about Palm Springs. We talked about Hamilton, but mostly we talked about Midnight Run, the 1988 classic from Martin Brest, starring Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. Mm. And that can be found on the feed. I find this one great discussion. One of the three of us had never seen Midnight Run before, and so it was fun to talk about.
The thing about it is there's these potatoes, and it's done it's done with a creamy sort of sauce, and in the middle is an onion.
It's a Lyonnaise potato.
It's delicious. It's a Lyonnaise potato.
Why didn't he win an Oscar? Can anyone explain to me why he didn't win an Oscar?
I'm unclear about that.
Like four of them. He should have also won Best Sound Design.
He's alive. He could play Martin Goodman.
Shea Whigham.
I knew. I was like, it's kind of like a lady name, but not quite. Shea Whigham. Talksplode has been recorded, so later this week you will get to hear a conversation with myself and artist Steve Lieber, who is on Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, co-created Whiteout. And did Spider-Man's, what are they called? Sinister?
Foes of Spider-Man.
Wow, we're really doing great tonight. This is what happened. I think it's worse than we do the show at night.
Yeah, I think it is. My brain's spent. It's fucking Foes of Spider-Man.
And then the Fix, also with Image Comics.
Right, right, right. That bullet just disappeared.
This guy is an artist's artist. I dug talking to him. There's some nuts and bolts stuff. He's been around a long time. I really dug it. I hope you will too when it comes out later. And then on the heels of that, at some point in the near future, I guess for next month, we will be talking in our next Book Split about Pluto Volume 1.
Yes.
Shouldn't take you too long to read through it. I'm guessing a lot of people already have. I'm going to go through and read it again. Connor's never read it. So you have time to prepare for it.
Yep.
All that said, get over to ifanboy.com. You can find all the podcasts you've ever done. You can find 80-something other Talksplodes that have been recorded and a bunch of Booksplodes. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy, following @ifanboy on Twitter, and @ifanboycomics on Instagram, which also features the best of the week in panels and anything else we can think to put up there. You can follow us in div. I didn't grab one panel this week, I just realized.
That's all right.
No, but I normally grab them and then don't post them. I didn't even grab any this week.
You can follow us. Week. That's fine.
You could follow us individually. C.S. Kilpatrick at Instagram and J.A. Flanagan over on Instagram too. And finally, he's going to talk after me. Subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. Keep up to date on old videos, show reuploads. Do you know what's going up now?
Like and subscribe. I do think people should subscribe if they're interested because you do get the notice. We were putting up like four things a week. Mm-hmm. What is happening? Is it for this past week or coming up? Oh, the past week. So the past week we had G.I. Joe, and we had a Vault show. That's where we took a look at a single issue. A lot of people ask, hey, when do you guys ever talk about indie graphic novels? It was on the video show, and it was specifically on the Vault show. So this week we talked about some single graphic novels, and we also had Josh's mini in which he looked at books that just disappeared, never came out again, just stopped coming out. So the fix would be
that Ed Brubaker now. Warren Police book that I can't remember the name of, but I talked about that in that one.
And then next week we're entering into con season 2007. So it's like San Diego Comic Con, Wizard World. There's a lot of con shows coming up,
mm-hmm.
which people don't care about.
Look out for that time that Thomas Jane just bombed our cold open.
Yeah, but that's much later.
I know.
That was an incredible moment. If you like the show, write a review, star rating, review wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple Podcasts is the most popular place, but if you listen somewhere else, please consider. Even just leaving a star rating helps the show. We do thank everyone who does that. Even better than that is to tell your friends. Word of mouth is a great way to help people find the show. And we do appreciate that. And thanks to everyone who does so. It's a big help. So we appreciate it.
I think we ended strong. I think it was for a little while, man, these guys don't like comics.
But then we got excited talking about 60s Marvel, and that got fun.
Oh, man.
There you go. Send us more questions about 60s Marvel.
Let's hear your casting.
You know, If you're reading listen to the show and you've never read Marvel Comics, The Untold Story,
mm-hmm.
you need to rectify that.
Yes.
And it came out a long time ago, but there's still people who haven't read it. You must, if you're a comics fan, if you're a Marvel fan, there's no reason. You have to read that book.
And if you can find a used copy, I cannot recommend Ronan Rose's Tales to Astonish book more. It was like the key to Kirby for me. Tom Scioli just came out with a Kirby comic book biography as well. I'm going to read that soon. Man, it's all fascinating. That Marvel Comics book is just, it's like the comics version of a Peter Biskin book.
right.
Yeah.
God, that was great.
Was that a reference that anyone will know?
Some will.
Okay.
And they'll feel satisfied about it.
Yeah, that's fine. You should read Peter Biskin books.
Until next week. Hopefully, we're looking to rebound next week. Yeah, it was grumpy. I'm sorry. You can comment about it if you want. This just happened. It happens sometimes.
I'm not grumpy. I'm unsatisfied.
Yeah. We're sorry. I'm not. You know what? I'm not sorry. Maybe next time the books will be better.
All right, pal.
Listen, pal.
Wrap it up.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.